This week on Out on the Air features award-winning broadcast journalist and host of NPR's The TED Radio Hour, Manoush Zamarodi, discussing her new book, Body Electric. Next, Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Chantal Gravaisek's new album, In My Own Voice, that reimagines her chart-topping songs originally written for other artists and performed by her. Our spotlight's on Miller Beach's 2026 Lake Effect Two-Day Mural Festival.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight from Miller Beach, the Miller Beach Arts. They have several things coming up, one of which is going to be in June at the Marshall J. Gardner Center and actually all around in the Lake Street area. And Julie Gibbs is the executive director for that. Thank you for coming back to Art on the Air and tell us about this new project coming up.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Esther. It's such a pleasure to be back. I'm here to talk about an ongoing festival that we have brought back to Miller Beach this summer. It's called the Lake Effect Street Art Festival, and it's going to be taking place June 13th and 14th this summer. Now, for people who aren't familiar, Lake Effect is a project that was started by Ish Mohammed and Felix Maldonado, two street art muralists who came to Miller in 2013 and introduced this idea of painting public murals on the buildings in Miller Beach. And so we actually have two full streets, two full alleys of murals. And the project originally was meant to take place every 2 years, but we had a little bit of a setback with COVID and street construction and things like that. But this year we're bringing it back, and we're going to have two mural teams from Kisa, the Crazy InStyle artist, which is the group that started this project, and a local Miller Beach artist named Grace Krupchak. And they're going to be creating new mural work along Old Miller Avenue. And that's right in the business district of Miller Beach along Lake Street. And during those 2 days, we're going to have all kinds of great activities.
So Julia, are these then permanent installations?
So what happens is that the murals last as long as it takes to get around to the next festival, and then they get painted over. Mm-hmm. So one of the really nice things that's going to be happening this year is that we have free guided tours taking place where people can walk around and see the existing murals, learn about some of the artists who have work installed in our neighborhood. And I think people would be really surprised to find that we have some quite well-known artists with work in the neighborhood at this point, people who've gone on to have pretty illustrious careers in their field, like Hebrew Brantley, J.C. Rivera, and as well someone familiar to the region, Felix Maldonado, better known as Flex, who's been doing the wonderful murals of the Jackson Five around the Gary area. So that's just one thing that's going to take place over the weekend. People can take those tours. Visitors can also help us create a community mural. There'll be an art project going on, and everyone can take part in that. We'll have music as well. The band Monosoul is going to be playing on Saturday. And we have DJ Trino Cavazos playing all day on Sunday. Folks can also take advantage of the Gary Public Transit Corporation's bike share program. They're going to have a table out and they're going to be offering people free bike rides. So you can actually pick up a map, bike around the murals yourself, or take a guided tour, watch the artists at work. It's going to be a really fun project.
That sounds excellent.
How many people are artists are involved? I mean, you described it.
We have two teams of artists coming out for the weekend. They are the Midwest Masters and ATT, and they tend to be a bit of a movable feast. There are different people involved depending on who can come. These are teams that actually work around the country at this point. There are festivals that take place all over the U.S. where street art muralists will go and take part and create new works in different cities and places. So we're actually getting some really well-regarded artists coming to the neighborhood to do new pieces. And, you know, we may have five or six people working on each mural. And then again, our local artist will be either working by herself or she'll bring a few friends. So this is a small version of the fest. And I'd encourage people to come out for it because we are bringing it back, but also because we hope to do a full version in 2027. And at that point, all the existing murals that are on the walls now will be painted over. So this is a great chance to see what does exist, learn about the artists who make this work, and, you know, take part in what's going to be a fun, you know, mini street fest.
So what else is going on with the Miller Theater? And I know they do that. And what are the exhibitions you have coming up in June?
Right. So in June, we're also opening a show, a solo artist, an emerging Indiana artist named Alejandra Mosqueda. And she has a show opening June 12th, the night before Lake Effect. And her show is called What Do You Believe? And she has made these very beautiful pieces that are reminiscent of stained glass windows in graphite and colored pencil and ink and pen. And they're quite unique. So I think people would enjoy seeing her work as well. And that opens Friday, June 12th. We have an opening reception, 6 to 8 p.m.
And anything going on with the theater?
The theater will have a show in the summertime. I believe they're doing a production of Urinetown.
Okay.
And those performances take place in July.
Very good. Well, in our last few moments here, wrap up how people can find out about your website and give us the dates once again.
Yeah, please do. Go to millerbeacharts.org. Look under upcoming events for information on Lake Effect. We have the schedule for both days posted now. Or you can call 219-885-9114 to speak with us directly. But I'd suggest people, just come out for the afternoon and it's going to be a real afternoon of discovery.
We appreciate you coming on Art in the Air Spotlight. Julie Gibbs from the Miller Beach Arts and Creative District. And you can see the whole thing, Lake Effect, going on there. Thank you for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Always something wonderful going on around you.
There really is. Yeah, it's great. Thank you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Ember Forge Consulting. With end-to-end expertise in learning strategy, design, and implementation, Ember Forge turns your organization's knowledge into impact. To learn more, visit emberforgeconsulting.com. We are delighted to invite you to attend a screening of the new Ken Burns, Sarah Botstein, David Schmidt PBS documentary, The American Revolution, in celebration of the 250th anniversary of the United States. Lakeshore Public Media, along with Indiana Humanities, are hosting a viewing and discussion at Maryville's Lake County Library on June 23rd at 6 p.m. The moderated panel of local community leaders will celebrate the spirit of service, examining volunteerism, civic participation, and public leadership. To make your reservations, go to Lakeshore Public Media website and click on the event graphic.
I'm Scott Simon of NPR, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Manoush Zalmabrody to Art on the Air. Manoush is an award-winning journalist, best-selling author, and host of NPR's TED Radio Hour, where she explores ideas with the world's greatest thinkers. Her Body Electric Project is a groundbreaking collaboration between NPR and Columbia University Medical Center. She has established herself as a pioneering voice in examining technologies impact on our humanity. Her current fascinating book, Body Electric, The Hidden Health Costs of the Digital Age and New Science to Reclaim Your Well-Being, is available now. It is an investigation into how sedentary screen life is reshaping the human body and the science-backed protocol for reclaiming our energy, focus, and health. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Manoush. It's so wonderful meeting you.
Thank you both so much for having me. I'm really pleased to be here.
Well, we'd love to have you on the show. And of course, I have to confess, I'm a regular listener. And the one thing I will confess is we have people on the show all the time. And I told my daughter, she kind of, and she's just about, I was like, oh my gosh, I listen to her all the time.
Aw, that's so awesome to hear. Tell her hi. Thank you, Larry.
Will do. Well, anyway, our audience always wants to know the background of our guests. And so I always say their origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about your background.
Okay. So sometimes people want to know the origins of my name, so I can start there. My dad is Iranian. My mother is Swiss. They met in Connecticut and ended up having three American children. It is the story of what happens to a lot of families in America, that they come from somewhere else and then they end up creating something new. So I grew up in New Jersey and ended up becoming a journalist right out of college. I was an intern at the BBC's News Bureau. I literally picked up the phone and called and said, hi, can I be an intern? And the bureau chief happened to pick up the phone and he said, what's that? And so I said, well, I come and work for you for free. And at the time, and he said, that sounds great. So that ended up turning into over 30 years now, journalism career. So the first 10 years were mostly breaking news around the world, in the United States. Then I transferred from being mostly a producer to being a reporter, mostly business and tech. And then about in 2012, I started doing a short business. It was started out as like an on the air thing, but then it turned into a podcast at New York Public Radio, WNYC. And that, you know, initially was really about this idea that the financial institutions were becoming influenced by technology. Tech was taking over Wall Street. And so I really wanted to report on, I mean, this was before Google even had New York headquarters. It was super weird. So there was this transformation happening in New York, but what ended up happening was that the show became more about how do we live with our technology. We ended up calling it Note to Self. This was when podcasts were taking off. And it was less about, you know, operating systems and upgrades and more about like, well, how does having a smartphone change the way you parent or you learn or you live your life, which seems rather quaint now. But at the time, these were really profound questions and the science just wasn't there. Like, how was this changing our relationship to how we think or how we find information, how we teach kids. So a lot of this was sort of asking listeners, you know, what do you think about this? What are you experiencing? And then also talking to researchers. So Note to Self ended in 2018 because I decided to leave and do my own thing. So I founded a little production company called Stable Genius Productions. And a year after that, I started working as the host of NPR's TED Radio Hour, which I had been friendly with the TED folks because I'd given a TED talk in 2017 and just really loved working with them. My talk was about a project that I had done about reclaiming boredom as an antidote to all the time that we spend looking at our screens and what actually happens in our brain when we get bored. And it turns out it's a wonderful gateway to mind wandering and creative thinking. So for the last 6 years, I've been talking to amazing people who at the top of their game in research and helping them tell their stories to a bigger audience. And it is just a delight and privilege and really, really fun.
So did the Body Electric come out of one of those talks?
No. So Body Electric, the book that just came out, but it was a project, and this had been something that was sort of simmering still from my love of thinking about how technology changes the way we live. And I, during the pandemic, you know, as everything went online, which was amazing and quite extraordinary how we transitioned so fast, but I just felt I just couldn't understand like why I still felt so tired all the time. I was safe. I was healthy. And I was sitting all day working on like my laptop. So why did I only have energy to like crawl over to the couch to scroll on my phone? And I think that didn't really change when we came out of the pandemic. I still had this low grade fatigue all the time. Like I couldn't think straight. And everybody else around me was saying how crappy they felt. And we've heard so much now about the mental health effects of being online a lot and social media. But to me, this felt so physical. And it just begged the question, like, what was happening to us biologically as we sat for hours scrolling, tapping, typing, and feeling exhausted? Like, what was going on?
Well, what about the stress of the time, like the fear? I mean, like in the beginning of the pandemic, there was so much fear.
I think. Absolutely. That definitely contributed to it. But that was why, you know, even when we came back into the world, that was my question. Was it just the pandemic that was making us, or was there something else going on? Right. And so that was when I was going for a walk with my dog, listening to the headlines on Morning Edition. And I heard about a study that had been done by a Columbia University Medical Center physiologist, a guy named Keith Diaz, who had been trying to figure out what was the least amount of movement that the human body needs in order to offset the harms of all the sitting we were doing. Because we've all heard like sitting is the new smoking, right? Like that's, we've all heard that. But his antidote was so interesting to me. He had found that 5 minutes of gentle movement every half hour during long sedentary stretches had radical effects on the human body. It cut glucose levels. It cut blood pressure levels. It also improved people's mood and their ability to focus. And it just made me think like, oh, this guy maybe has the answer to why we're all so exhausted and tired all the time. So we ended up combining forces, my team at NPR, his team at Columbia, to do a clinical trial to see if it was even feasible for people to take movement breaks, how they did it, what the effects were. And I am delighted to report that it will be published in a scientific journal very shortly. Really exciting.
I know the effects are immediate, too, which is just so wonderful. It's not like something you have to work at for a month to feel the benefits of.
Yes, that's exactly right. And so I should to finish. Sorry, your question was, did that come out of TED Radio Hour? It was part of the way that we recruited the audience to get them interested, explaining the science behind his work and also doing a lot of interviews with other people about the what was happening in terms of our eyes and our ears and our whole relationship with our bodies and our technology. And then for the book that just came out, I spent the last few years really combing through not just the data, but the stories and things that people told us. We had 20,000 people giving us all sorts of anecdotes. And it really was interesting to see, you know, how did a retired person start to integrate movement into their life versus, and how do they live with their technology versus a college student? So that was so fun for me to go through and break it apart demographically and try to understand how people built their habits and what results they saw and their challenges and sort of put it together into a protocol and through life stages, you know, how does this relate not only to what you do with your time, but how you feel in the world and how your brain functions as well?
Well, I have a quick go back to your childhood question.
Okay.
So what was it like? Like, were you writing in middle school? What was the family life like? Was there lots of—
Oh, we're going back,
reading?
Way back.
Yeah, way back. I just think it's so much, so many times our childhoods inform what we do. In the future.
Yeah. And I never would have thought that, Esther, except now I think I finally get it. So my parents are both physicians. They are retired psychiatrists who specialize in geriatric neurological illnesses. So, you know, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, all of those things. So my brother and sister, none of us went to medical school. None of us were particularly good at math. I just sort of figured like, oh, that skipped our generation. But now here I am talking about science and cognitive function and all of these things all the time, which is kind of strange, except that I think I also realized, as you know, a daughter of people who were immigrants, you very much are the eldest child is the sort of public facing person for the family in many ways. You are the one figuring out how does the school system work. My parents were like, I don't know, we're busy, we have other kids and jobs, and this is America, so you figure it out. And I think that, so it's, I mean, maybe, you know, 2020 hindsight, but I think you're right. Like that combining of like storytelling and explaining with, you know, this constant kind of low grade science family life.
You seem to really enjoy it. And I mean, the science. Well,
the irony to me is that I hated science in high school. I hated it. And I think, had there been a storytelling and an experimental and a use case scenario, like nobody ever told me why I needed to learn this or told me the stories behind the scientists and what they were excited about. And I see, you know, today a lot of teachers are much better at understanding like how to make, you know, let's like, I feel like my kids, when they were coming home from grade school, something was always being set on fire in a good way to demonstrate something. And, you know, they were looking into the stories of the people and what their motivation was and the problems they were trying to solve. And that's what, you know, I get excited about on TED Radio Hour, is helping scientists explain, like, well, why are you even bothering? This sounds really hard and you may never find an answer. And, you know, what drives them? What is the problem they want to solve? And I think had that been part of my education, that maybe I would have enjoyed it more.
Well, I'd like to take you away from the book for a moment. And let's talk about your routine, both with NPR, TED, and how does that work? I mean, people sometimes, you know, they magically turn on and there is the show and there's your podcast and everything like that. We understand a little bit better here, but tell our audience how that works.
Yeah, so I am not the creator of this show, but 12 years ago, there was a team at NPR that reached out to TED. This was when TED Talks were really just taking off big time online. And you know, they're a bit of a cliche now, right? Everybody knows, and this is my TED Talk, right? But at the time, like, it was just sort of happening, and it felt very, you know, new and exciting and fresh. And the people that were giving TED Talks were extraordinary, and there was so much more to talk about in addition to what they explained on the TED stage. And so the team at NPR, they partnered in really a groundbreaking collaboration between two media giants to make this show. And Guy Raz was the host for six years.
Right.
And then I guess I've took over at the halfway mark now. Here we are at 12 years. And, you know, that was its own stressful thing, taking over from someone who is so identified with the brand itself. But my goal was to, you know, keep the things that were working the same, which was the format at the time. And but just to bring my own sort of, you know, I'm a woman and a mom and, you know, not Guy Raz. So that was different enough. and it's been an absolute pleasure. So I think, you know, what a triumph to have these two, TED and NPR, be able to collaborate for so long to reach so many people. And the world in media, as you both know, is a very different place than it was 12 years ago. And, you know, I think we'll have to watch this space. Iteration has to happen. I think we have to be constantly evolving to survive in this media landscape.
Real quick, what's the daily routine to put together TED?
Yeah, so we are a remote team, meaning like some people live in Washington, D.C. I myself live in Brooklyn, and I have my own studio, which is a couple blocks away from my house. That was my... I was like, you know, you've made it when you can bring your dog to work and no one cares. And so it's great. I pop over here to do interviews. And if, you know, my kids are home or my husband's home, to get away from them. And it's a mix. It's a mix of interviewing people, researching to get ready to interview people, working on edits of the conversations and drafts, writing scripts. But now we also do a lot of other things that we didn't do 6 years ago when I joined, which is we have something called NPR Plus. So this is for membership. So extra podcast episodes. And we do videos for social media, which we didn't do before. And there's a Body Electric newsletter, which goes out every other week. So need to write that. So You know, just so many. It's not just a radio show anymore. It is so many different things. And then, of course, you know, writing on the side for myself. I have my own Substack where I sort of work out ideas that I'm working on. And for the last couple of years, I've been writing this book and now trying to, you know, make sure I share it with the world and get more people moving.
Are you doing Zigzag still?
No. So, Larry, deep cut, you're referring to my crypto experiment. I have to say, though, it is one of the things I am most proud of, the first season of Zigzag, which... TLDR, give you the short version here. My producer and I, a company reached out to us who were using blockchain and cryptocurrency to try to build a new model for journalism. If you don't know what that means, we didn't either. And so the first season of this podcast was sort of a documentary of the two of us trying to understand blockchain and crypto, and was everyone BSing us all the time, or was there actually something here that could make journalism survive in this ad-driven space? And it ended spectacularly in an explosion of ideas and sorrow, and it was a good romp. I learned a lot, that's for sure.
So it sounds like you have a pretty full plate. One thing we're interested in is what's on the horizon? I mean, you know, the book has just come out, so it's kind of like you've just given birth to your baby here, but, you know, what's coming up on the horizon?
Well, it just seems to me that as I talk to people, you know, their work is changing more quickly than ever before. An interview that I did 6 months ago, back in the day, oh, you could have rerun that a year later, 3 years later, probably would have stayed mostly the same. That is certainly not the case now. I think, especially in the things I'm interested in, the science, the tech, the health, between CRISPR and genomics and GLP-1s and wearables and AI, and like things are just moving so incredibly fast. And I think that's really scary for people. But I think there's also a lot of, you know, I talk to the people who are finding it really exciting and promising.
It's very historical. I mean,
yes. You
know, I mean, it's not the first time we've seen this big growth.
Agreed. And it does remind me of that moment back in 2012, 2013, where I got the smartphone and was like, whoa, this is changing everything. I can be at the playground and on a call at the same time. Like, that's crazy. You know, and when I say on a call, I mean, like, you know, that I can be doing multiple things on one device while my meat bag, my body, is somewhere else. Like, that just felt so radical to me, and that I could check, you know, what time the library was going to open while I'm pushing a kid on the swing. It sounds so simple now, but at the time it really was revolutionary, and I'm getting the same feeling now, right? We're at this, as you say, Esther, like this historical moment. There's a threshold happening here where we don't know where it's all going. Information feels like it's being exploded. Anyone can create it. We are consuming it nonstop. We're also multiplying it with AI, you know, remixing it in all kinds of ways, some of that good, some of that bad. And I think AI, you know, when we say AI, what does that even mean? That means so many different things. Right. It runs our cars. It's, you know, looking at our mammograms, for example. It's also being used to write college essays, for better words. So, like, yeah, it does feel like we're back at this sort of beginning of, like, having to understand what we're talking about and then try to really be smart and thoughtful.
Right. Make protocols and try to
Rein
it in as well. I mean, you have the explosion, but then you have to work with it.
Definitely. But I would say the difference is now is that scientists seem more inclined to study the effects of our behaviors and usage than they were 10, 15 years ago. I think at that point, they were still so, like, you know, doing research takes years, and it didn't even really occur to them that anything was happening. And then it took, you know, for example, like when we did the Bored and Brilliant project in 2015, this idea that like our attention span was somehow being affected by our phone use. Nobody had done any research into that at all, which was why I was like, whoa, this feels like it's happening really fast. Maybe we, the people, have to do some of this research to at least get the conversation started.
Right. You have to add the human factor, right, because so much of the science happens and there's like real people that are affected by it. And so that's like the brilliant part right now, that our physiology and our emotions are being factored into a lot of this now.
Yes, I think that is the sense that we understand more about how the body and brain, that they're not just communicating to each other, that they are an integrated system, and that, you know, our behavior, as much as our, well, even more than our genetics, we've learned genetics really only affects what max 10%, they now say, right, of our health. So absolutely, the knowledge that we have about how humans function layered on with all this technology, I mean, it is one big petri dish that we're living in, isn't it, all day long?
Well, you know, what's the big takeaway? We only have about 2 minutes left. So what's the big takeaway from Body Electric that you'd like our audience to hear about and, of course, get the book?
Yeah, so for me, I think I think people are tired of being shamed for their tech use, that, you know, enough screen time, it's so bad for you. Well, guess what? Like, a lot of us have kids, elderly parents, jobs that we like. Maybe it's how we stay connected with our friends and our community. Of course, we learn a ton on our technology.
Oh my God, our children are so, so smart and so intuitive with all of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so how do we begin to bring back a modicum of, like, we have to live with these devices. They're not going away anytime soon. And I think we have to talk about things that are missing in our lives, like movement throughout the day. You know, back in the 1800s, nobody said, like, gosh, I got to get into nature, until the Industrial Revolution happened and there were cities and all of those things. And so we're at this moment where the things that are being crowded out by technology, we need to use language to talk about them, to be purposeful and intentional about factoring them into our lives. So for me, the book is about feeling back in your body and the amazing effects that can have on your mood, on your basic health, on your ability to learn and use your brain at every stage in your life, whether you are a young person, an information worker, as we're called, or you're retired or you're an older adult. I mean, this is the answer to longevity. It is not cryogenics or, you know, whatever else the billionaires might make you think. It is proven. There is scientific backing. Interstitial movement is an incredible tool that we all have. It is free. It is available. It's not easy to do, but 20,000 people tried, and their stories are at the heart of this book.
And unfortunately, we are out of time. Body Electric, Manoush Zomorodi, of course, you hear TED Radio Hour and NPR and everything. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing Body Electric. It was a great read. I especially liked the things at the end because, you know, kind of like, oh, yeah, that was great and everything. But it's an easy read, and then you get to the sums and you spend some time there. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing.
Larry and Esther, thank you so much for having me. This was just a delight.
Thank you.
Yes, complete pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yay! Thank you both.
This is Raina Duris, host of World Cafe, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Chantal Kreviazuk to Art on the Air. Chantal is a Canadian singer, songwriter, composer, pianist, and activist. Her debut album, Under These Rocks and Stones, was released in 1996. She received her first Juno Award in 1997 as Best New Artist. More albums and awards followed, Juno's Best Adult Pop Album, Best Female Artist, and a Grammy, and she is a member of the Order of Canada for her humanitarian work. Her work has appeared on many soundtracks for films and television shows. Chantal and her husband, Rain Maida of Our Lady Peace, created a documentary of the process of writing songs for their joint album, Moon vs. Sun, and their efforts to work on some of the fissures in their long marriage. The film is called I'm Going to Break Your Heart, and it is a very moving film. Her current album, My Own Voice, is releasing May 22nd of 2026 and is a 12-track collection that reimagines chart-topping songs she originally wrote for other artists, now reclaimed and performed in her own voice. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Chantal. It is so wonderful to
meet you. Mahalo. I love the aloha. I've been to Hawaii 3 times in the past 3 months, girl. So you're speaking of my language. It's my happy place.
Oh, and it's the most beautiful word.
Aloha. Yeah, it really is.
Well, yeah. Chantal, we welcome you to the show. And of course, we always like our guests to share their, what I call it, their origin story. So I want you to tell us how you got from where you were to where you are now.
That's really, wow, loaded question. You know, I am 29 and I'm just kidding. I was going to say, you know, it's been a long 29 years. So, you know, I come from this place called Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and it's a very cold place for a better part of the year. We have the cold and then we have mosquitoes and then we have several weeks that we can jump in lakes and swim in our pools and so on. And it gets very hot and beautiful, but it's a pretty rigid and challenging place to grow up in. And so I think you learn the most amazing lessons in coping. And music is one of those skills that I think a lot of people develop where I'm from, and people lean into or lean on the sort of comfort of playing music, of making music, recording music, writing music. And I was one of those people. And my brothers were older than me, 5 and 8 years older than me, and they were already enrolled in the Conservatory of Music program, which, especially when we were growing up, was very, very popular. All the kids that were studying music, a lot of them, a great percentage of them, were enrolled in the Conservatory of Music of Canada, and which is sort of a British teaching of traditional teaching of music, classical training, if you will. I really, really wanted to do what my brothers were doing, but I was little and my mom would make me wait. And I just couldn't wait for the day that I was allowed to take these lessons that they were in. And in the meantime, I was very influenced by all of the music surrounding me from so many places with, you know, my fellow countrymen and women who were leaning on the music too. My mother was listening to everything from John Lennon and Yoko Ono's Double Fantasy to my father's Elvis Presley. My mother was also very into her spiritual and, you know, soulful music because they were quite religious. And then my brothers would listen to, you know, Judas Priest and The Cars. And then my neighbor brothers, I would call them, I was the girl next door. There were 4 neighbor brothers and they were listening to more Floyd and Neil Young. And then my older cousins who kind of raised me musically were listening to a lot of, you know, Fleetwood Mac and the Guess Who. And I didn't know, for example, that, you know, Burton Cummings was born and raised down, you know, kind of down the way from me there in Manitoba. But I was very into These Eyes and Laughing. And yeah. And then, of course, I just took the baton from all these influences and found my own way through the current pop music. And while I was studying classical, I very much loved rock and pop music, Led Zeppelin, you know, Joni Mitchell. I was just crazy about everything. I was just ingesting everything. And I think it just started to come out like a, like sort of a sponge, you know, wringing a sponge. And I started writing my own music at a very young age. I was very little. I used to write songs on the school bus when we were on our way to school. Everything is far in a prairie province from each other. So my school was like 45 minutes by bus. And so there'd be a lot of us on the bus. And sometimes by the end of the school ride, I'd written a song and the kids were singing it. And, aww. You know, that when I see my friends, you know, that I've been friends with for 45, 50 years, they still sing those songs to me. And that's very moving to
so
me now.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's incredible. I was writing about impoverished people, indigenous people who were, you know, seemingly dying on the street, you know, in the cold and such. And I found a way to sort of kind of harvest the sights and the feelings of being like a prairie girl into music And there was always nature references in the songs I was writing, the blankets of snow and the wind and the quiet at night. And so it's like this very harsh and yet peaceful place. And so, this is what shaped me. And then one day when I was a little bit older, like 19 or so, my boyfriend, or the boy I liked a lot, and I did have, kind of this, kid deep boyfriend-girlfriend relationship with him, kind of ongoing, but he had become somebody I couldn't really hang out with that much because his mental health had taken a turn. And he wasn't himself anymore. And it was a very quick turnaround with, I would call it, I guess, like a break in reality that he'd had. And a lot of kids end up doing a lot of drinking and drugs in a harsh climate. They're bored. They're seeking some other kind of self-realization other than what they're seeing around them that doesn't seem very hopeful, And right. So he ended up not living through that. And that was very powerful to me. In my life, it impacted me greatly. And I wrote a song called Surrounded about it. I sent it to a music label, or a friend did, and Columbia Records, satellite company out of Toronto, received the CD of me singing this song I'd written about Samuel, and it was called Surrounded. And it really changed my life within probably 48 hours of them receiving it, maybe less. I found myself, the recipient of a publishing deal and a label deal with this massive international company called Sony Music. And it changed my life. And I met my husband because of that, because he was on the same label with his band, Our Lady Peace. And we got married. We had three children. I've put out, I guess this will be my, In My Own Voice will be my eighth album. And then my ninth will be another one coming out this year later of original songs. And I am making music with him again too. So my hometown really... a lot of people say, oh yeah, it was a great place to grow up. I mean, wow, it really shaped who I am. I'm about to receive the Order of Manitoba, and the Lieutenant General called me on my phone and they said, we have the Lieutenant General on the phone to speak to you. And I thought, oh, they probably want me to come home and present something to somebody or whatever. And she said, hi, we're pleased to announce that we're presenting you with the Order of Manitoba. And I was like, but why? Because I haven't lived there for a long time. And I thought, what have I done, And she said, well, you bring a lot of honor to Manitoba. Very moving to me to hear those words. Because to me, growing up in Manitoba made me a hearty girl. And I'm the one who's honored. Like, I'm the one who received all these traits. Like, it's probably got the most snow of anywhere besides Siberia for its populace. And yet, there's no snowflakes there. We are hearty, hearty people. And if we hear no, or, we hit a wall, we find a way through it, and I'm really grateful for like the spirit that I got from my place of origin. And it just shaped me to being the, the tough nut that I am.
Well, congratulations on the award.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I was going to have you set up the first song. This is actually from a 2002 album, What If It All Means Something? Yeah, Feels Like Home. Tell us a little bit about that and we'll play that.
Well, What If It All Means Something is special. The song itself is special to me because my husband's not a piano player, but he kept playing this riff over and over again while we were dating. And one day I said to him, you're not doing anything with that. Can I have that? And that was the first time we collaborated. He said, sure, you can have it. So his name was on there, as a co-writer on that one. The song meant a lot to me because I think that, people talk about coincidences and then, a lot of people don't see life that way. They see it like, oh no, everything is sort of happening for a reason and you're where you're supposed to be at this moment and all that. And so I'm not saying I have the answer. I am asking the question, what if it all be something? And I don't think I've changed much in my standing on that one. I don't have the answer yet, but I do love to reflect on that possibility.
Well, let's take a listen to it. That Feels Like Home, What If It Means Something on the 2002 album with our guest today, Chantel Kerviasek.
Something in your eyes makes me want to lose myself. Makes me wanna lose myself. There's something in your voice that makes my heart beat fast. Hope this feeling lasts the rest of my life. If you
back from that, it feels like home. What if it all means something? Chantel Kerbiasek. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
Was it about a particular person?
Well, Feels Like Home is actually written by Randy Newman. Let me correct that. Sorry, what if it all means something, I kind of thought, oh, wait, is he playing What If It All Means Something? So Feels Like Home was a song that Randy Newman had written and had been covered by, Bonnie Raitt and Linda Ronstadt. It continues to be covered by people, all the time to this day. I think Brian Adams and Diana Krall did one of
the most popular. Really.
But I think I don't know. But I do know that once it got into Dawson's Creek, it was Columbia wanted to have it as a part of that soundtrack. And then it got picked up again. Kate Hudson is a friend of mine, and I think maybe a fan. And she did this film called How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and two of my songs popped into that one. So one of them was my cover of Feels Like Home. And then it kind of went through the roof, and it still just plays like crazy every week. I see the numbers in this digital era, and it's like, wow, like it just had such an impact on so many people. It's a popular wedding song. Some lady came up to me and told me that she had it at all three of her weddings.
There you go.
Pretty cute.
Well, on your new album, we want to talk about that, In My Own Voice, and this is coming out in May of 2026, Over My Dead Body. Tell us about that song, and we'll take a listen.
Yeah, I bumped into Drake one evening in Toronto, and a friend of ours had said, oh, you two have to work together. And so when I saw him, I said, oh my gosh, Adrian says we should work together. And he said, oh my gosh, yes, 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 yes. And he said, how long are you in town? And I was like, I don't know. I was probably in for a couple of days or something. And he said, well, we're working tonight if you want to go over to the studio. So I did. And 40, his producer, and I had kind of already gotten this song going. And then he popped in, and the rest is history. It's a really exciting song to be part of, you know, because that was sort of really early on in his career. In fact, that was the first song recorded for the album Take Care.
Was what you won the Grammy for, right?
Yes, because I'm a producer. Yeah. Yes.
Grammys are good. So let's take a listen to it. Chantelle Kraviasek, Over My Dead Body.
How I'm feeling, it doesn't matter, because you know I'm okay. And still I ask myself, why do you worry when no, you know I'm the same? Oh, I know you don't love me, baby, that's right, to take you away from me, only over.
Over My Dead Body from In My Own Voice. That's coming out May 2026. Chantelle Kraviasek. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited. It's nice to be able to sing all those songs and kind of a little bit more of a singer-songwriter style and bring new life, you know, to these really beautiful collaborations.
So you're on tour right now. Tell us just briefly about that. We've only got about a minute and a half left, believe it or not.
Yeah, no, it's been great. I'm feeling like, you know, all moms need a tour. And my kids are getting older. It's easier to leave. And America's a giant beast of a country. Canada, I can tour, run across it in 2 weeks. But this is more, it's a bit more of a task to take on. So I feel ready, you know. and it's been a thrill. New York was incredible. I'm playing Philly tonight and wrapping it up in Annapolis. But Boston, Chicago was gorgeous on the lake. Oh, my God, stunning spring day. I'm just so grateful. And the people are still here waiting. It's beautiful.
Well, we're so glad to have you on Art in the Air, sharing your album. Over My Dead Body is the song you heard, and it's In My Own Voice, coming out May 2026. And what's your website?
Yeah, May 22nd. So I guess that's, what, Thursday or something? And my website is ChantelKreviazyk.com.
Sounds good. Well, our guest today was Chantel Kreviazyk, and you can listen to her. And also, when you click on her picture on our website, we'll take you right to her website. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing not only your life journey, but your music.
Thank you so very kindly.
Yeah, it's been a real, real pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, you're lovely. Thank you so much. I hope to see you guys again soon in Indiana.
In Indiana, yes.
I'm coming. And I'm knocking on your door. You better come to the show. You know what I'm saying?
You're going to love it in Indiana.
Yay, I can't wait.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell it to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at AOTA@breck.com. That's AOTA@breck.com. BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.